Welcome back. I know, it's good to be back from break. It was fun, went out and bought all new clothes last week, you know, bought new shoes and a lunch pail and everything to get back in the swing of things. Hope we all did the same. We'll skip the first item, which was everyone reporting on what they did on their summer vacation. I think we don't want to hear that. All right, we're going to start, though, with reviewing the agenda for next Monday's... before we start with that, we're going to switch around the agenda a little bit. I'm okay?
Yes. I would do the agenda first.
I'm sorry, what?
You're going to do the agenda first?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Yes, okay.
I'm just going to let everybody know.
Oh, now to the whole agenda. Thank
yeah.
you. Okay.
Okay. You're supposed to follow the script. We rehearsed this. Okay, no, we didn't. What we're going to do is we're going to have a special, an executive session, and it's in the middle. It's items 3 and 4. What we will do is that we will move, except for the report on the CFDs, the schedule of meetings, and the items for citizens present, we will do after agenda item 2, and then we'll go into executive session so you don't have to wait through us coming back. So. Agenda for next Monday. Page 2. Page 3. I remember all of these annexation items are the introduction so they can begin collecting petitions, so there will be no action taken on those. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Councilmember Richards.
I've lost track of all the buttons.
We have to retrain you? We've been gone a month?
Pretty much. I was looking for a little bit more information on the roads pool. I have a few concerns in there that I just because we were gone, we didn't have a chance to talk about them. So if there's an opportunity to talk about that roads pool reconstruction.
Okay. You wanted, like, do you have some specific questions you want answered right now?
The flow rider wave feature is the thing that stuck out in my mind. It looked like it was typically in our new pools, we're building water slides, and it looks like this is the replacement feature for a water slide. And I just don't know anything about the maintenance costs of those, what the expense is. It looks like they're building a whole additional building to service that. If we could get an idea of what the costs are associated with that.
Great. Good morning, Mayor, Council members. We have looked at a lot of amenities to take into Rhodes Pool, slides and flow riders and all and the like. And what we're trying to do with this particular pool is go with more of an active amenity. We found that the slides and so forth are very static. The kids go down them, they have fun for a little while, and then they're off doing something else, whereas the flow rider is something that they can progress on and continue to get better and better and better and better, and we're hopeful that that will have a long honeymoon. The maintenance cost on those are fairly minimal. I mean, it's simple motors that run the pool. They still go through the pool system in terms of its filtration and all that other sort of stuff. There are some...
Could you define minimal?
You know, and I don't have the... I mean, I don't think we've broken down exactly
I think minimal means not very much.
Like, specifically with the dollar amount attached to it.
Specifics. Okay.
Have there been anywhere else these have been installed in the valley? Is it a new technology? Is it...
There's none that are installed in Arizona. There's quite a few in California and in Missouri, as well as obviously they're going to have them here at the Wave Yard. We'll have these types of facilities as well. And let me go back to the minimal and why we don't have a good handle on the expense of the utilities. Those are paid by Mesa Public Schools, so we do not receive that bill and are unaware of.
Is the maintenance cost for the flow rider paid by Mesa Public Schools?
The utilities of it are, yes.
Not
the maintenance cost. When the thing breaks down, who fixes it?
We do.
Okay. I'd like a little bit more information about that before we move too far forward with this.
Is it basically just a super pump that's that's, is that what?
Three pumps.
Okay, so really we have our normal pumping system through the whole pool system. This is just some more high-powered pumps. So basically the pumps are the potential maintenance item.
Yeah, there's an additional building that gets built for the Flow Rider
that
service
pump.
That.
So
if we could get a little bit more information before this went too far forward.
I'm sure they can get to that.
Is there a time sensitivity on this contract?
Yes.
What is it?
If I could, I can kind of give you a comparison. I'm Darla, I'm the recreation supervisor. The comparison between a slide and a Flow Rider are very comparable. A slide does have its own building. It can. For example, when we put the slide in at Fremont, it has its own building to house the filtration unit and the motor and all of the same things that it requires to operate. The Flow Rider is a little more complicated. It does have a few more motors. But with a slide, we have to re-gel coat it. We have lots of maintenance. So in a lot of capacity, it's similar. The Flow Rider will be slightly more, but we don't anticipate that it'll be drastically different as far as the maintenance goes. The kinds of maintenance things that we're going to have to do are, you know, cleaning out filters, and for slides, we have to re-gel coat the entire thing. You don't have to do that for the Flow Rider. And the motors, except for taking them out once a year and maintaining them, if a motor breaks down, it's the same way with a slide. If it breaks down, it takes a similar kind of repair.
I'm guessing we have some kind of installation warranty on this thing.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
For how long?
It's at least a year with the entire project. So we get a full year's warranty after we accept the project. So it's our standard warranties that we have.
That would be on the project. I
would
imagine
the
specific
project.
Pumps hopefully have a longer a mechanical 3 to 5 years or whatever. Wouldn't that be standard for a pump or maybe?
Well, I can look into that. I don't know that right off the top of my head. You asked a question about time sensitivity as well, I think, Councilmember Richens. The contractor's telling us right now it's going to take a solid 10 months to build this. If you've been to the road site, it's extremely tight. We will be working during school session throughout the year. We've staged it really well with the contractor to keep the construction separated from the students and the class and the student traffic. But right now, it's a solid 10 months to get it built. I believe Parks is wanting to get it open by next July 4th so we don't lose the entire season next year and we don't end up taking it out for more than the first part of the season. So there is time sensitivity right now.
Councilmember Higgins?
Yeah, it's my understanding that the cost of that is just broken up from the other pool we had originally designed right in downtown Mesa, so that it's out of that quality of life budget. It's not an additional cost.
That's correct.
I think that's where the money is coming from, but the overall expense of the item is pretty huge.
Speak up.
I just really like to see more detail on those costs, and I'm sure you guys have done that and you have all that.
We can get that.
But it just helps me be a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, I think this was discussed more in detail with the previous council, so we haven't had the luxury of, this is the bid, and so we haven't had the luxury of getting some of that background and detail, so if you could just provide us with some details.
I'll get it all out to you this week, and so you can see it.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mayor. We showed, we have videos and so forth that we showed to previous councils of this amenity, and we can bring all of that stuff back in terms of how it operates and so forth.
Yeah, you just want to get it to us in a packet so we can review it maybe before Monday so we understand a little bit better what we're voting on.
Certainly, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember. Anything else on page 7? Page 8? Page 9. Councilmember Summers.
I'm on 10.
Oh, you're on 10?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Just bled over to page 10.
Well, let's do page 9 then. Page 9? Nothing? Okay, now page 10.
Please.
Councilmember Summers.
I would like to remove item 8F and ask the council to consider a continuance of this introduction. This particular project is in my district, and there is a development agreement in the works, but that development agreement is nowhere near being completed. Well, let me back off. It's not completed. There are some lines back. Paul Gilbert's in the audience, the attorney for that particular client, has asked if we could reconsider this on the 25th. He's confident that he can have all that, the development agreement, completed by the 25th. That speaks to the quality of the project being placed in here. So I'm not ready to introduce this yet.
Okay.
Is there going to be a problem with that timing, Debbie?
Well, it depends on the council's wish. If we can introduce now and then on the 25th move to continue to a date certain. This has already been published in the newspaper pursuant to state law for a public hearing on the 25th. If we are not going to introduce now, we will have to start that process, that notification process and publication process over. It requires 15 days notice to the public. So if we do not introduce now, we will have to wait at least 15 days beyond the date that we publish next. And during that 15-day period, we can introduce and then consider. We're looking at probably sometime in September then for the consideration. So we can do that. Option two is to introduce now and then on the 25th continue to a date certain. That will not require that we republish the notification a second time.
But if there's a change to the development agreement as is anticipated and we introduce today, we end up having to reintroduce it anyway, do we not?
Well, that's a possibility, Council Member, because the ordinance that is being proposed for introduction now does reference a development agreement and terms that are expected to be included in that development agreement. If the development agreement that is finally negotiated does not include all of those terms, we'll have to reintroduce the ordinance, which will require new publication and starting that process over again.
And currently it doesn't. So if we introduce, if we introduce today and continue, we're going to end up having to reintroduce on September 8th if we change the DA.
If we change the DA. The status of the DA, you'd have to speak to Mr. Jibjiniak. I'm not at this point aware of what the terms in the DA are.
Now, okay. Do we have to have a completely, because if I recall, we've introduced and been working on the final details of DAs after we've introduced. We just referenced the DA as long as, but I'm not understanding that we have to have all the specifics of a DA completely tied down at the time of introduction in order to meet the requirements.
Mayor, we do not. We have to by the time of, well, generally we don't even have to, but generally the council wants the DA completed before the consideration
right.
of the zoning. However, I think what Council Member Summers is referencing to, and if I can take a moment and pull up the ordinance that's being considered, there are specific items that are referenced in the ordinance.
That reference the development agreement or reference items and conditions within the development agreement?
It's stipulation number 11. It says compliance with the development agreement for the site as negotiated with the City Council that would include items such as a minimum square footage for commercial employment uses, minimum square footage for Class A office development, minimum height of Class A office development, restriction of uses, and overall quality of development. So the ordinance that's being introduced anticipates that the development agreement will include provisions addressing each one of these items.
It doesn't deal with the specific items related to those. It's just that those items need to be included.
Need to be addressed
somehow.
So
if we eliminated, for example, a minimum square footage, that would be changing the item in the ordinance. If we say 10,000 feet versus 15,000 feet, that doesn't seem like that would change the...
I agree with you, Mayor.
Okay.
It just needs to be addressed.
I don't anticipate that the changes would violate that, so I would like to continue this to the 25th.
Well, you want to continue it? You want to pull it off?
Again, if the development agreement will address all of the items listed in this ordinance,
then we don't have to reintroduce.
We can still introduce now and then just continue final consideration when the development agreement is completed.
Dang. Okay. I've got a nod from...
For the 25th?
We'll go ahead and introduce, and then if we need to take final action, we can, if there's a problem with taking final action on the 25th, we can postpone, or we can continue. But right now, we will go ahead and introduce the ordinance.
Mayor, Councilman Summers, this still allows you to continue the negotiations on the development agreement, even after introduction, because you can then push it back to whatever date you need.
Okay.
For continuance.
And that's okay with that, Mr. Gilbert? Okay.
All right.
Does that make sense? We'll go ahead and introduce the ordinance. As long as the development agreement in its substance does not change, add, or, well, it could even add, but it can't eliminate the items in the stipulation, you can work on the details within those items and still meet the notification requirements and the publishing requirements. And in any case, we can continue. And when we come up for final action after the
that's right,
on
Mayor.
The ordinance.
Let's
okay.
pull it for the consent agenda.
Okay.
We'll talk about it Monday.
So that's pulled from the consent item 8F. Anything else on page 10? Page 11? Page 12. On, yes, Ms. Spinner.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to point out for the council, on 10B and 10C, this is a little different because what we have here is if these items remain on the consent agenda, it will be a denial. So I just wanted to point that out because it's a little different than the way we normally do the agenda.
We are voting to accept the staff recommendation of denial is what we're doing.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And there's a similar on 11A. We will. It's also similar. If you leave this item on consent, you are voting to overturn the hearing officer's denial of the sign.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. To accept the appeal.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Ms. Higgins.
No.
Sufficiently confusing for you?
No, I understood that actually in its entirety. I actually had a question on page 11, but we went by it too
on
fast.
On page 11?
I had a...
I'm sorry, we've already passed that.
We'll
go ahead.
Have another meeting for that.
No,
I have a couple things. The first one was on 9E, which was related to... the IGA.
Okay. I'm sorry, which one? 9E?
9E is in...
9ECHO?
9ECHO.
Okay, thank you.
I just wondered, it's relating to, the impounding fee for our animal shelter costs. Is there any way of recovering some of those costs by, you know, we found your animal, now we're going to charge you $12.50 instead of $9.95 to pick them up, like that?
I think we tried at one time to bill the dogs, but we couldn't find a good address. We couldn't collect.
Their visas weren't clearing, so.
Good morning, Mayor Smith, members of council. Councilmember Higgins, at this point, I don't know. It's certainly something that staff could look into. At this point, with regards to the IGA, the terms of that IGA basically provide for impound services after hours, 5:30 to 11:30 p.m. It's an IGA that Mesa PD, prior to animal control transitioning from PD to code compliance, it's an IGA that they had in place for about 5 years. I don't know if that was ever part of the discussions as far as any attempt to recover costs, but it's certainly something I suppose that we could look into.
Yeah, I don't know, is that being silly, but you know, after our pet retrieval, you know, I would expect to pay something as a citizen to get my doggy out. Just a comment. After hours bail. That's it. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think it's a valid thing to look at. See if
we can talk to him.
We can talk to him. Okay. Thank you.
I have a 9F.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, not this one. Sorry. The next item.
9F.
9F.
9 Foxtrot.
9 Foxtrot. And this is regarding the new bus, you know, our bus agreements, fixed bus costs that Mesa picks up. This is one of my cost recovery items. Is there an opportunity to advertise perhaps on buses and or bus stops to help recover some of the costs that we incur for these bus routes that are not recovered?
Mayor, Councilman Higgins, yes, there is. It's a little bit complicated. First of all, advertising on the buses, we buy all of our bus service from the RPTA. They have a policy not to advertise on their buses or inside their buses. However, there is an opportunity to advertise on shelters, very much like the City of Phoenix and Chandler do at shelters, as well as get some cost recovery on that. My staff initiated about a month ago looking into what Chandler and Phoenix have been doing. We're developing a report that we would like to present eventually on a proposal to do something very similar to what Chandler has been doing, which is basically the city puts the pad down, the private advertising firm puts in the shelter with the advertising, maintains it, and also pays a fee back to the city. I think the city of Chandler right now receives between about $4,000 and $7,000 a month on that program, as well as receiving the shelters, and they get, they don't have to maintain those shelters as well. So it's a very beneficial program. We're looking into that. Obviously, there's some things with the zoning we have to look at. The sign development codes don't allow that right now. So there are some changes that you would have to deal with that. But we're looking at it and would like to bring that forward very soon.
Yeah, and the reason is it's always anything that could get more shelters up. You see people standing in the shade of a telephone pole, and you feel bad. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that telephone pole usually has an advertisement on it, doesn't it? So we're already advertising on our bus stops is what you're saying. Mr. James, without the revenue, that's right. Yeah. I don't want to go into this right now, but I would like to at some point in time get a report or something as to why RPTA has decided never to advertise on their buses and all that. I had that same question. I mean, any other city I use, rapid transit, mass transit, there's always advertising, and I'd like to understand. I've heard the debates in the previous council on advertising. I would prepare a report for us on why RPTA does not allow that, so we can maybe decide whether we want to take that up with them. And also, if there are zoning considerations on the signage and the advertising, would you please, as part of it, go ahead and prepare a proposal as to the change the zoning, so we can maybe, if we're going to decide to do that, we can take care of that right then. Okay.
Yes, sir. We can do that, and we'll bring that right back.
Thank you.
Yep.
Go ahead. No.
Councilmember Fenter.
Well, if we're moving on to page 12.
I had a page 11 question. Sorry. One more page 11 question. 9H. We are talking about hiring two new clerks. I just wondered, do we have numbers of clients that come in that they service in that department? Is two close to being enough? We're still way behind by three people, that type of thing.
In other words, are you asking if the grant, 9H, right?
Yeah, is that going to really meet
Does their the
needs?
Grant cover our needs, or are we just hiring to the grant and doing the best we can?
Thank you. Exactly.
My understanding is, and we can clarify, my understanding, these are ongoing grants. These positions have been in place for some time. This is that grant coming back to the, I guess renewal maybe be a better word. And certainly I will suggest to you that I think the activity in that area is quite extensive, unfortunately, and there's quite a bit of service that has to be provided in that area.
And we're staffing to the grant.
And we're staffing. I mean, the grant provides, typically we identify our needs, and then we have to obviously even justify the positions even to the grantor. So I think we could say that these positions are needed. Okay. And I believe these positions are in place today, and this is just a continuation.
Right. And the question was, like the mayor articulated for me, are we really meeting the needs of the community with those two people?
Okay. Well, look, maybe we could, Councilman Kavanaugh Woodring, maybe one of the public safety committee meetings, which you're on, right? We could have a presentation on that, what that happens in that group and the services they provide and what that demand is.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Fenter, that's it for page 11? Page 12, Councilmember Fenter.
Thanks. I appreciate the clarification by Ms. Spinner about what we're voting on these denials for these annexation requests. I'd like to get a little bit more information of the impact. From what I read, it seems like fire hydrants are the big issue. And what options do these residents have? And maybe a bigger picture look at it. How is this going to affect all that county area to the east down the road? Because there's no fire hydrants anywhere. Are we going to be consistent? And I think it's a major impact, a major part of this.
Mayor, Councilman Fenter, and that is an epic struggle that we have, because there are inside of the, you know, if you want to call it the city's boundary where we already have city limits, inside the county, in the county islands, there are several residents that actually are being serviced by the city for at least maybe water, not always sewer, but maybe both. But unfortunately, they are outside the, is it 250-foot limit of the, from a fire hydrant.
You're right, from the center line of the
center line. And that's a concerning factor for fire. And so the concern we have is that we are bringing in some properties that are going to create some operational challenges for the fire department. And what we do is we do pass on this information to the applicant to let them know that the issue has to do with the fire hydrants and being able to provide that service. But your point is well taken. Over the long term, this is a huge issue for a lot of the county islands, and whether or not the service that they're going to be getting from you know, today is rural metro and how that will sustain itself. There's some challenges that we're going to have in answering that question in the future. I don't know, did you have anything else to
No, add? That was totally accurate.
Go right ahead.
I appreciate that explanation. A follow-up, now the 250-foot outside the center line of the property, engines carry 1,000 feet of 5-inch. What's the rationale or criteria that you choose for that?
Well, at this time, we're basing those decisions off of the fire code, and we'll default back to that decision. Go ahead.
The rationale behind that is, yes, most engines will carry 1,000 feet. However, if they've been on a fire the day before or whatnot, a section of that hose might have been left behind because they cleared that scene early. That's just one incident. But the typical pre-connect is only, the typical pre-connect on the engines about 200 feet, and then you have the suction hose about 50 feet. So that gets you just about to the house. And when we start extending those distances to the fire hydrants, it just extends our reaction time and getting water on the fire.
And Mayor and Councilman, and this is really going to have to be a part of the conversation about yeah. annexation. And I think we're trying to schedule that meeting for September 8th, correct?
This is going to be a part of that discussion. A couple of meetings ago, and I think this is what, as Mr. Brady says, is part of our overall review of our process at this place and time, or time and place, either one, as to how we're going to approach these annexations. I mean, the simple fact is that we are struggling to provide adequate services within the existing city limits, and we have these additional challenges that even without that consideration would be a real issue. Now, the question is that if they don't have fire service now, or they don't have adequate fire hydrant placement, how is that going to change in the next 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and yet they are within a county island that is also completely surrounded by a strip annex. It's a challenging question that I think we need to take some more time to really look into and address these issues long term. It's been discussed before by previous councils. There have been a couple of different approaches, and we're finding out that there is no perfect solution. But I think what we have right now is the combination of existing challenges with the city of providing adequate coverage and services. Add to that the physical challenges of the fact that we have an infrastructure within these county islands that does not meet our even basic standards. You know, can we in good conscience or in good management take on additional responsibilities that don't even meet basic standards? That's a real difficult question. And I would think that, and what I've heard from the council is that we maybe ought to step back, take a look at where we are and where we want to head and where we can head, given the current limitations, practical limitations that we have. I know there's some issues as far as fees and things like that, and we can work through that as far as timing and people. We've had a rash of applications now trying to beat a fee increase. I think we can work through that and be fair and find it, because I don't want to rush to decisions based on some arbitrary fee schedule that we can work around and make a bad decision for the long term when we really should be looking at some of the more basic issues. Let's go to Council Member Summers and then back to Council Member Fenton.
Mayor, then on items, if you can hear me, on items B and C, since we're going to have some more deliberation on policy direction, then perhaps we should continue these for 30 days before we deny them, and then have those deliberations and then consider what we're going to do with these particular cases.
And I believe...
Is that what you already said?
Well, what I was going to say is, in the past, we said let's put them into the system and then let's work through it through the infrastructure committees. Here we're saying you can't even get into the system, so it's a little bit more restrictive. If there's all these questions, we don't want to waste our time here.
I think technically the issue is they're in the system and we're up to decision point time. And what we had before is we discussed it.
Oh, these are in and coming through the policy. Thank you for that.
We've sort of put it off because we were saying these are in the system. We're going to let them go through the normal process, hoping that the decision day would not occur. Well, guess what? We're here. Yeah.
Can we then motion? Oh, I'm sorry, Mayor.
No, go right ahead.
If we could delay these maybe 30 days and then give us some time to
Ms. Spinner,
to talk
procedurally
about it
how would that, what would be the best way to make that work?
we can certainly continue them, Mayor. I guess I would have a question for John. Do we have to post? Well, this is for final consideration, so have we already posted for?
We're done with all that.
So will we have to start the posting over again?
Yes, we have posted, but if we continue to a date specific, if we go 4 months to the September 22nd meeting, then it would have just been continued and it shouldn't be any problem with the posting or the notice.
Okay. Let me just, Mayor and Council, we could do that, but all we're talking about on the September 8th is a committee meeting, not a change. Right. And one committee can't change a policy or make a decision. It can recommend and advise the council as a whole. I guess what I'm saying is I don't even know if 30 days is going to be enough if we're on September 8th. So I don't know 60. How far we have to go. Well, that's what I'm saying. I just think it need to go beyond.
Why don't we say 60?
Okay.
Why don't we say 60?
Okay.
So we will change the agenda to say that the motion is for 60-day continuance until, and then we'll have the date certain.
Yeah, we'll get the date.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that okay with everybody?
10 B and C.
Yes.
10 Bravo and Charlie. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Page 13. Page 13. You want to continue the vacation, don't you?
He actually
the entire agenda. Let's continue that. That 60. I like it. Now we figured it out. Page 13. Page 14. And page 15. Okay. Boy, that was easy. Now, item 2 on the agenda, we're going to discuss and provide direction on the process to appoint a city magistrate. All of the council members have received an information packet, which includes, I believe, council reports, applications, and DVD on the interview process that went on to come up with some suggestions from our judicial advisory board. What we thought would be good is Mr. Scott Rhodes, a member of that board, and who has the great distinction of finishing well ahead of me in law school.
He passed.
That's right.
Ooh. Oh, man.
Mr. Scott Rhodes is here. And I have to give Scott some credit because it was very late notice to have him come in. And hopefully give us a little bit of a background and a summary of the process that this committee went through, because there was a lot of work involved, a lot of deliberation, and rather than just take this information packet cold turkey, we thought we'd get a little bit of a basis and background. So Mr. Rhodes, please go right ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, council members. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I would like to run you through sort of the basis why the Judicial Advisory Board exists and what we are required by ordinance to do, and then give you an idea of the practicalities of how we go about doing what we're doing, so you'll have a better sense of what you received in your packets, where it came from, and of course answer any questions you might have as to what we do, and also any thoughts you might have or questions as to how you can best proceed in reaching a decision based on what we've given you. The reason I'm sitting here today is because, as the mayor mentioned, you have three names before you of which you should or may select one for an open position. And I'll get to, in the course of my comments, what exactly your options are with respect to those three names. By way of background, first of all, the Judicial Advisory Board is codified in your city code. It's set, Chapter 3, Section 2. It's not very long. If you have any questions as to what I'm saying, you can refer to that. We are an independent board. We're independent of the court, and I think that's important for you to know. We are not retained by the court. We are not appointed by the court. We are, in fact, appointed by the city council upon recommendation of other bodies, as I'll get into for a moment. We're also independent of you. We do not consult with you, as you know, before we reach our decisions, but we, in fact, look at applications or look at existing judges and make recommendations to you based on our own processes. And the reason I'm pointing to the independence is because the purpose, the reason why a judicial advisory board exists, both in Mesa and in other communities around Arizona, is to allow you some distance from the politics that might be incumbent with any appointment, under the theory that it's very important to have an independent judiciary. It's very important for this city to have a city court that operates based in the highest fashion possible with the most integrity possible that is free from politics. Unlike other appointments where you might expect to have to be approached by individuals who want to promote a certain individual for the position, several years ago throughout Mesa, but also, as I said, other communities, from the initiation of the Arizona Supreme Court, it was concluded that it's better when it comes to a court to have an independent body first review the applicants or the current judges so that they can, when you know that what you are receiving is free of political pressure, and you can then take the advice or take the recommendations or leave them as you will. The board consists by statute of several members. There are two members of the judiciary. There's an appointee of the Superior Court bench, an appointee of the Court of Appeals bench. Our current chair is Judge David Talamante, who expresses his regret. He has a very full calendar today, and otherwise he would have been here to join me today. We have a vacancy in the Court of Appeals because our Court of Appeals member, Judge Murray Snow, was recently appointed to the Federal District Court bench, and so now the Court of Appeals will replace him. There are two lawyers on the board. I am the representative of the State Bar of Arizona. The State Bar presents to the Council, when there's a vacancy, three names, and the Council selects one of those names. And in a similar fashion, the Maricopa County Bar Association suggests names when that seat is open, and then the Council selects one of those. There are also three citizen members who, by ordinance, may be neither lawyers nor judges, so that there is a balance on this committee between the judicial point of view, the lawyer's point of view, and the citizen's point of view. As a member of this committee, I will tell you that that balance is extremely important and it works very well. Our current board does an excellent job in communicating among ourselves the factors that are important to each of those elements. And as a result of that, I am very impressed with the balance and the respect for each other's position that we consider when we're going through applications and then making final suggestions to you. We have two charges on this committee. One is, as in the current situation, when there's a vacancy on the court, we, in working with city staff, we put together an announcement of the position and an application for the position, and then we review the applicants for the position. Of the current position that is open right now, that is up for your consideration, I believe there were 22 applicants, all of whom were highly qualified. So first, you can rest assured that it is a position that is sought after in the community to become a magistrate in the city of Mesa, and very good people are applying for it. Of those individuals, we selected six to interview. In your packet, you have the applications of the three individuals that we selected. You have the DVD of the interviews that we conducted. And you have a letter from the board which describes each of the three people that we selected. Let me tell you that by ordinance, we give you the three names alphabetically. We do not order them by our preference, and we will not order them by our preference. And in fact, we try to be neutral in our description of each of the three to give you the positive attributes of each person that we saw to allow you, once again, free of any political pressure. We don't want you to believe that we're pressuring you to select any of those three. We believe we've given you three outstanding candidates, and now upon review of the application, the DVDs, and our letter, we hope that you will have the information you need to proceed. Another part of our job is to make recommendations to you for reappointments. Now, under the city court system, when an individual is appointed to the court, as in this particular example, when you appoint whoever you select, that individual will serve 2 years and then will come up for reappointment, and then will serve another 2-year term and then will come up for reappointment. And after that, the terms become 4 years. And I think it's a pretty good system because it allows you to make your initial judgment and then come back and see how that judge has done over a 2-year period. And even then, you're not tying into a longer period of time. You have another 2-year period. At each section, at each time period, the Judicial Advisory Board will take, and it's a different process then. We don't open it up for applications. We receive surveys. The state court system has a pretty extensive survey process where everybody who passes before a court, whether it's an individual who is a defendant, whether it's a witness, whether it's a jury member, whether it's a lawyer, staff members, everyone receives a survey and an opportunity to comment on the performance of judges in every case. I would say the biggest challenge you have is that the rate of return on those surveys is pretty low, and it's something that we've talked about among ourselves. We're not quite sure how to do it. We think all city courts have the same problem, probably because people are in and out of court pretty quickly, and they're either happy or not happy, depending on, you know, what happened. But we look at those surveys. We also observe the judges. We go ourselves to observe the judges, and we develop any information that we want. With respect to an initial appointment, which is what you have now, I wanted to tell you a little bit about our process. We all looked at all the applications, and we made a decision among ourselves based on consensus majority vote who would be interviewed. That was with all of our eyes on all of the applications. And then we narrowed it down to six. And again, then our jobs were to know those applications even better, since there are fewer of them, but we assigned due diligence to one member of the committee for each applicant. Each applicant is required to give us a certain number of references. We call those references to the extent that we can. In my particular case, when I did my due diligence, not only did I call the references, but in a discussion with a reference, if I heard another name, I would go beyond that list and I would start heading down and trying to find other people who knew the particular applicant. I can tell you that the board worked very hard in that respect. And when we went through our application process and then met, each person responsible for due diligence had done an excellent job, and we had very good reports on each applicant. And then the last part is that the interview process. We come up with the questions. The questions are the same for every applicant. You'll see that in the DVDs, and we allow each applicant to respond. We grade them, then we adjourn into executive session. We begin our deliberations. And then based on that, we had the difficult task of coming up with three individuals. And as I said before, I believe that we've sent you three very qualified potential judges for your court. Mayor asked me to talk about if I had any recommendations as to how you proceed. And the only recommendation I have is that I ask you to please review the things that I told you about, the applications, the DVDs. I think it's very important to judge the demeanor of each individual, and our letter. One of the things that we looked at the most, and this is based on the volume of cases that go through this court. A city court judge sees a tremendous number of people, applicants, lawyers, or defendants, lawyers, and other citizens throughout the course of a year. The volume of work is very high. We look at the ability of the person to handle volume, to handle the stress of a very busy day without it showing. We look at the ability of the person to command a courtroom with respect, and very importantly, because so many people who come before this court are not represented, we look at the ability of that judge to communicate with a non-represented citizen what his or her rights are, and to be certain that that individual is making a decision based on a knowledgeable and informed understanding of the rights. That of all things, was probably the most important concept that we looked at. The individuals were qualified. Many of them had experience in municipal courts, but even someone who doesn't have direct experience could learn this law over time, but there are things that you learn less well that are innate, and that is the ability to be a good judge and to represent the city well, and that's what we were trying to find.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of Mr. Rhodes? First of all, I'd like to thank you and the board, because it's obvious that you take your task very seriously. This is an important deal. It's one of the most important things we can do as a council is to choose our judges, because they have such an impact and the representation that they are of government in general and of basically who we are. So I appreciate the work that the board put in and the thoughtful deliberation. Now, Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Just a comment. I really appreciate Mr. Rhodes' presentation. Back in the deep mist of time, as Mr. Rhodes will remember, I worked with him and city staff to help create the ordinance that we have. And it's one of those gratifying times in coming back on the council to look back over the process, to look at the integrity of the process the dedication of the people who serve on that Judicial Advisory Board, because it's intense and time demanding. And consistently, the advisory board has made recommendations of really stellar candidates to the council, and the choices have been very difficult throughout the years, because the it's produced really quality candidates for us to consider. And as Mr. Rhodes indicated, oftentimes a municipal court is a challenging operation. Our judges there don't have the luxury and liberties that judges on the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court may have. And it's a very different venue, but it oftentimes our residents' only experience in court, either their first experience or their only experience in the judicial system. And that's why it's very important to have a professional setting, one where people are treated like human beings who are treated fairly and effectively. So I think there's a high degree of confidence in the process and the candidates that we have. And selecting judges is really one of the most important things that we can do as a council, but certainly, at least from my perspective, the work that our advisory board has done throughout the years, and again, it's reflected in this current pool, is of very, very high quality work, high quality candidates for us to look at. So you'll discover the choices are not easy to make, because they all the candidates that come to you on final recommendation really are very well qualified.
And that's one of the good problems to have, is have a difficult decision. I think how we'd like to proceed is that we're obviously not ready to move into this right now, but I wanted us to have the presentation so we understood the process, the background, before we started looking at the packets. If over the next week, members of the council, if we could review the packets, review the DVDs, with the idea of not coming up with a final decision next week, but perhaps deciding what next step we want to take. We really have two choices. We can rely upon the information that we have been given and the work that the advisory board has done and basically make a decision without any further investigation. We can also invite the three applicants before us to have a follow-up interview so we can get to feel how they are sitting in that chair and review that. And that's the one thing that I'd like maybe next week to come back and let's make a decision on how we want to proceed. Then we'll proceed to schedule interviews and have them figure out exactly how we're doing. Does that sound okay, Ms. Spinner? We don't want to stretch this out too long, but since a lot of this came with the break, I don't either want to rush it. So if that's okay with everybody, let's come prepared next week to make a decision as to whether we want to proceed or whether we have enough information to make a decision. But at least you'll have both the background that Mr. Rhodes gave us and also a cursory or hopefully an in-depth review of both the packet and the DVD that was sent to you.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, yeah. The ordinance gives you the following choices with the individuals we've sent to you. Select one of them, as you mentioned.
Right.
Reject the whole panel and tell us to start over again. Or send one or more back to us with a request for more due diligence or further follow-up. And I did not get to the question that you just raised, which I think is a good one, and it's entirely your decision, which is, do you want to call the, you'll see them on DVD, but maybe that's different than seeing them in person.
Yeah.
And do you want to call them in and talk to them yourselves?
And I think that having a review, since this is the first time most of us have been going through this process, I'd like to be a little bit extra careful so that we give it the respect that I think it needs and the due consideration that we need. So if that's okay with everyone on council, we'll follow that. Come ready. We'll put it on the agenda for next Thursday. Oh, next Thursday we don't have.
We'll probably do it before the Monday 25th council.
Yes,
meeting.
Let's do that, because I forgot we don't have a study session next Thursday. We'll do it before the 25th, and if there's something that comes up before, we can adjust accordingly. But if everyone in the next week would review their packets, then we'll move forward. Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate that.
Get you back to school and I got homework.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to skip to agenda item 6, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Anybody? Well, I will say one thing. I had the opportunity and the privilege to meet yesterday with the city employees who work in Parks and Recreation to give a short little talk and also to have them ask me questions. And Rhett was very good at throwing me some softballs, which was good, you know, and that should be duly noted in his personnel file. He gave me softballs. But then they opened up to the audience, and it was very gratifying to have some direct and tough questions from our city employees. And I'm consistently, overwhelmed by the quality of people we have working for the city and their dedication and their desire to provide good service. You know, we have ways to go in getting everything right. We're working on it, but the dedication is there, the commitment is there, and it was really good to be in front of those Parks and Rec employees yesterday. Councilmember Summers.
I think there are a few things that we've done over the last month that need to be noted. Councilmember Higgins and I rode the first, had a ride along on 535, the rapid bus route from her district to downtown Phoenix. That was quite the ride. 533, which comes out of Southeast Mesa, is full. So if you don't want to I'd like to say if you don't want to stand up, go ride that one, but apparently that one's full too. So we're working on seeing about getting additional service from Southeast Mesa. The mayor dug into some dirt at the Banner Baywood for a new emergency room. I think that's the second grand opening of some sort. I've been out there. They had a major expansion about 2 years ago, and now they're expanding the emergency room. And couple that with two more hospitals that have opened up in the last 2 years. We're doing really well with seeing a tremendous expansion of healthcare for the East Valley, but particularly for East Mesa. And we were on the light rail with the mayor. Apparently Kyle and I had our picture taken on the front page of the, I'm sorry, Sonu, it was on the Republic. My wife said I looked terrified, and for the record, the mayor was driving at the time, so I was really holding tight. And you did a good job, Mayor. So
you weren't as terrified as those who work for Metro, standing right behind me, ready to pounce.
I apologize to the vice mayor for screaming in his ear the whole way while you had to control. I'm sorry about that, Kyle. I hope the hearing comes back. Thanks.
Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I just want to again thank the Mesa Fire Department for on Tuesday signifying Drowning Prevention Awareness Month again. And that's why we're wearing little purple ribbons for those of you that have wondered what that's for. And we continue to be vigilant with our children and adults that cannot swim around water. And the mayor had a great thing. And I'm really proud to be in a city where we have little heroes, where our little six-year-old was, honored for saving his three-year-old cousin. So it's really amazing. And it was just fun that we, as a city, all got behind our community and continue to push us on. Number two, if you're at home and see this little pile and kind of look at our agenda and base it on the height of the paper, I just want to thank Carla Wagner City Manager's Office for figuring out the concept of getting this whole huge packet double-sided so that we're saving many trees and being fiscally responsible with our paper supply. Appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Well, from what you can hear, even though we were on break and did not have official meetings, we could spend another 10, 15 minutes going over everything we did during that time off. And my appreciation goes out to everybody who, in spite of not having formal meetings, a lot still goes on, much has been done, and we're grateful to all those employees and those who do so much, and the service groups, the nonprofits. So much is going on, and like I say, we could keep reporting and reporting, but we have been busy, but yet good to be back and have formal meetings again so I can be harassed by
me.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Just a comment on two events that I attended this past weekend, along with a number of us on the council. We attended the initial session for the Mesa Leadership class this year, and I want to commend the volunteers who have continued this program throughout the years. Many of us on the council have participated in it, and we're very pleased at the interest in the entering class in going through this program. I think next month they will be focusing on city government, so I'm sure we will all be seeing them here very shortly. The other event that was very noteworthy for me was the kickoff for the Symphony of the Southwest, formerly Mesa Symphony. I think they're now in their 52nd year. It's a very resilient group that has had many successes and many challenges, but it was very gratifying to see the community support for that organization. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And as part of that LTD, it was catered by Omar, and who's the owner of the new restaurant. The Bedelli, right. The bistro on Center and Main Street. And I can tell you that if that's any indication, it's going to be a place that we'll be frequenting. And I believe that opens this week, doesn't it?
I think so.
This week or next week, I think I read. So congratulations to him, and exciting things going on.
We'll check it out.
Go check him out many times. Go check any business in Mesa out, but especially those that are around the Arts Center and downtown that are starting up. We have a grand opening tomorrow. Mesa was chosen as the place for Dunkin' Donuts rollout. So any of you who want to join me at 4:45 tomorrow morning, no takers, huh? Okay.
What time?
4:45. We'll be at Southern and Baseline and Stapley, I'm sorry. I believe Dunkin' Donuts opening 9 stores across the valley, and they've chosen the Mesa one to have their grand opening. And I think the fireworks are involved, but I understand they're
in the morning.
Yeah, I understand they're quiet fireworks.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go just see how that works.
Fireworks at 4:45.
Quiet fireworks, apparently.
Mayor,
we're good. So, yes, Councilmember Richin.
Is that being done in conjunction with the Fit City event at 5 a.m.?
That's right. Long John's at 4:45, Fit City at 5. We got it. Okay, Mr. Brady, let's move on.
Please. Just quickly, concerning the calendar coming up, we do have our council meeting for Monday, August 18th. And there will be a brief study session before that. We will not have a council study session on August 21st to allow the members of the council to attend the league conference. And so we will not have that. But in order for the council to have the opportunity to review the agenda, we will have an early start to the Monday, August 25th. Council meeting. We'll do a study session before then we'll give more time for review of the agenda for that meeting. So, and that will be preceded by a public safety committee meeting, which I believe we have scheduled today at 3:30. And so what I'm anticipating is about an hour and a half for that, and then beginning the council study session around 5 o'clock, which would give us 30, 45 minutes to review that agenda. And I believe that's it. I think we've mentioned that it looks like we will have a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting on September 8th. I think that's what we're checking on right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move to items from citizens present. We have one request to speak. Grace Coakley. Grace, like to have a seat?
Mayor and council members, I just wanted to say a couple of things about the annexation request. It's 5L on the agenda, and it's A0812. I think I've been a past deputy city clerk of Mesa, much more comfortable sitting over there taking notes than here. My husband's lived in the city of Mesa since 1940 and worked here. We buy our vehicles here. We're very loyal to the city of Mesa. And my heart is really in this annexation for good reasons for all our neighbors, and also for selfish reasons for me, because I want to have representation in District 5. I want to be able to vote in city elections, and I really would like to serve on a city board before I get too old to do that. So I wrote down a few things because I'm better at writing than spontaneous speaking, and it will make my comments more concise, I believe. I do feel that we applied under one set of rules, and then it's kind of rolling over to another set of rules. I do understand not wanting to bring people into the city that are far back in developments where the infrastructure isn't there, and the it'd be difficult for police and fire to figure out who they service and who they don't. But we sit within 10 feet of the city. There are only three houses there that face Brown Road, and we're right, we feel we're in the city, and everything we do is in the city. Our application is not a property surrounded by county in some subdivisions, and therefore, which might cause problems. There are three city fire hydrants within 300 feet or less of all three dwellings included in this request. I believe existing city fire hydrants would be used by either the city or the county to fight our fires. And therefore, if one entity can do it, I would think the other could too. Our properties are contiguous to the city on two sides. This parcel is unique because at this time, we are part city and part county, and because we front on Power Road. We were made even more part of the city by the encroachment during the widening of Power Road. The service road was taken out, and actually they went 5 feet into people's property that they shouldn't have, but they paid them for it. Motorcycle policemen sit in our driveway to slow the traffic for Fremont Junior High, for which we are very happy. That's very good, a good thing that exists right now. And we would like to belong to just one entity and not be kind of part and part there. And Mesa is, of course, the option that we would have. And I ask you to look closely at the information if I think you got some in your packet that I provided. And also maybe come out and take a look at where we are. You can see it right now by those beautiful posting signs that exist in our driveways. And we're not hidden away in a subdivision. We're right out there. And I guess that's about all I can say. I hope you will maybe even consider not continuing this particular case. I hope to find it on the consent agenda, but it wasn't there. So I thank you very much for your time.
Grace, thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
My mother incidentally taught special ed under your father.
Oh.
And we have children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren in the Mesa school system. I've been in the principal's office more with them than thankfully I ever was.
You may not want to say, maybe that's not a good idea to bring that up at this time, Grace. Thank you so very much. We appreciate that. Okay, we will move on. We'll recess the current council meeting. I'll entertain a motion to enter into executive session.
So moved.
Moved by the vice mayor, second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We will now move into to executive session. Favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have adjourned our the executive session, and we are back in session, for the study session. Next item on the study session agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on revising the policy for the establishment of community facility districts, better known as CFDs, which is not some sort of disease, but it is an actual tool. Mr. Rigby, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Mayor. let me introduce Keith, our bond counsel. Keith Hoskins, our bond counsel, who's been providing a lot of help for us on this issue, community facilities districts. It's a clean program, not any disease. We're going to go through this pretty quickly in the interest of time. What we're generally here is to provide an update on CFDs and get direction from you on how to move forward with possible revisions. Just in general, CFDs are special improvement districts. They're a separate political subdivision. They are governed by mayor and council. If a CFD is authorized, the formation of a separate CFD board generally consists of mayor and council. In certain determinations, council can delegate that to a separate entity. The key thing with CFDs, they have an authority to levy property taxes and assessments, and this was back in 1988. That was a good year. It was established by state legislature. CFDs can do a number of important things. Critically, they can help manage annexations and growth, especially in my focus that is focused on the Gateway area, where it's an opportunity to encourage or incent landowners to work with us.
Scott, I have a question, and it goes back to the last slide. When it says has the authority to levy property taxes, are they technically and actually a property tax,
or is it some other, named by some other that functions similar to a property? Is it an assessment, or what is the terminology there?
Mr. Mayor, the Community Facilities District has the authority to levy a property tax, an ad valorem property tax,
okay,
just like a school district or any other, like many other types of special districts. And they also have the authority to levy special assessments.
Okay.
And to charge revenues, fees, and other things.
But just
but
so
it
we're...
is a straight ad valorem property tax on your tax bill, just like the community college.
But just so
like
we're clear so that people don't jump to the next thing, and that is only within the confines of that district,
absolutely.
And that district is basically self-imposed. It's self-created.
Yep.
It's people or entities within that district agreeing to tax themselves for specific purposes only within the boundaries of that district. This is not a citywide or anything like that.
Yeah, correct. And there's election requirements and other procedures to allow you to do the...
Okay. Councilmember Richens? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So one of the values of CFTs is we can work with development community or property owners who see the need or the value of doing a CFD to bring critical infrastructure out to their area. One of the things that we've talked about with people that have expressed interest is performance-based CFDs, and you might say, what does that mean? Is instead of just simply saying, here's a CFD, go do whatever, we sit down with the applicant and sit down and really start to ask them, what do you envision doing with this? What are you bringing to the table? Is it more than just simply subdividing your land and bringing infrastructure to that, or is it, are you bringing X, Y, Z in tow for the specific type of development? So it's one of the things that we've talked about with some of the early interest we received. And again, it's with the critical aspect of providing infrastructure out to a specific area without impacting the city's limited city resources. Why a CFD? Beneficial to growth and development, especially out in the Mesa Gateway area. I'll use that example because I'm most familiar with that. I can point to you on my hand the number of roads we have out there, and point to you on several hands the number of roads we need to build out in the area. It's kind of the single biggest economic challenge we have out in that area to see development occur is infrastructure.
So what you're saying is that this is a tool to get back to an adage that we hear a lot for growth to pay for itself, because literally those who are creating the need are paying to fulfill that need.
Absolutely.
Through a CFD. That's the mechanism they can use for literally that growth to pay for itself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
An additional part of the public infrastructure with the CFD, there is a component, and Keith can probably talk a little bit better than I can about there is a portion of that assessment that can be used for O&M on those public improvements. Generally, they don't cover the total cost of the operation maintenance, but there is a portion of that revenue that can go towards operation maintenance of those public improvements after they're constructed. And again, it doesn't impact city bonding capacity or rating, which I think is an important thing. There's three general methods. Keith talked a little bit about these. There's general obligation bonds, approved by district voters and paid by the district in and of itself. There's assessment bonds, and there's revenue bonds. These are some of the things eligible.
Councilmember Richens?
Since the CFD is a new entity when it's formed, what would the bond rating be based on when they issue those bonds?
if you went to get the bonds rated, they'd look at the value of the land and the owners and the status of development and all of those issues. But typically, it depends also on what type of deal you do. If you do a ad valorem property tax, general obligation bonds, it depends on how much bonds you issue. We can do a deal where you only issue enough. You look at what the assessed value is now at the time you issue the bonds, and decide what, say, a $1 tax rate or a $2 tax rate could produce in debt service each year, and you size your bonds for that. And that's not that aggressive, and so that might have a very strong rating. If instead you issue general obligation bonds that would require a $5 tax rate or a $6 tax rate, then you might have a real, that would affect how the credit market would look at your district. When you do special assessments, we look at the value of the land compared to the value of the assessment lien that you're putting on the land. So again, if you're assessing $3,500 per lot, that might not be a big deal to people. If you're assessing $25,000 per lot, that's a much tougher deal. So really the how you structure the deal affects the answer. But they do not look to the credit worthiness of the city of Mesa. They look to the value of the land and the development in the district, which is responsible for the bonds.
And the credit worthiness of the person who owns the land and their ability to pay that back, does that have a play?
Yes, it does, although like in any property tax or assessment, the owner really has no personal liability to make the payment. They could just let you take their land. So however wealthy and credit worthy the owner is, if the land is the sort of land they could walk away from and decide, well, you've assessed me so much, I really don't need that piece of property anymore, it's cheaper just to let you take it. So their value doesn't really help you. So the main focus, I think, is on the value of the land. It's often referred to as land-based financing. But certainly the strength, the development experience, and of the landowner or the landowner's affiliates come into play.
Okay. Thank you.
So I guess what we're saying is that market conditions and the market realities, the financial market reality, are any Tom, Dick, or Harry can't run out, and even if we allow them to, they might be able to set up a CFD, but then you get into the realities of the financing and the underwriting. So there are some self-controlling factors in place here that limit the ability for anyone to run out and do this. It's got to be the right project, right time, in order to get financed.
And Mr. Mayor, I should add, that's part of the purpose of the guidelines, because in order to issue bonds, the district board, which typically is the mayor and council of the city acting as the district board, ultimately are the ones that decide yes to issue bonds or no, we're not going to issue the bonds. So at that point, you look at the deal and you say, well, this is way too many bonds for this time at this deal, or no, we're comfortable with that. So you do have that control. The guidelines set some of the basic parameters of that in terms of some of the coverage tests and the target tax rates and things like that. And that's sort of to let people know so they don't come and barrage you with deals that you really don't want to do. The other piece of that, though, is when you get a district going, you usually have some sort of upfront development agreement tied to their other entitlements and zoning issues. You also talk about some of these rules. What kind of bonds are they planning to issue? What sort of coverage do you expect? What sort of types of bonds would you allow or not allow? So that's another point where the developer may ask you to commit to certain limits and restrictions. But it's an important place to look and decide, okay, well, how far are we going down this path? And so throughout any CFD, it's incumbent upon the city and the staff, the district's board, to look at the deal they're making and whether those bonds should be issued or not.
I think, Mayor, that's a great point. You know, back in the previous slide, we talked about performance-based CFDs. That's the opportunity for the city really to take a close analysis of what they're proposing. What are they bringing to the table? And then additionally, one of the items in the policy talks about independent market absorption analysis of this type of a project. Is it realistic to think they could pay off the bonds on their assessments that they're proposing in that period of time? So these are some of the items: police, fire, libraries, parks and recreation, streets. Streets and water and wastewater are the dominant items you see financed by CFDs, but these other items can also be financed. Just quickly, here's the process. Mayor, Council, if you were to accept a policy, you have an existing policy. What we're talking about today is getting some direction from you whether or not we want to move forward of updating that policy. We think there's some merits to doing that. But in the event you do, the mayor adopts a policy application by a landowner. That goes to an evaluation by staff. It's pretty intensive and detailed. If there's a recommendation that comes forward from staff to take the application to council, the council then decides whether to move forward or not, and if so, to form the district. There's a development agreement that Keith talked about, laying out the key aspects of what the development is, what the requirements are, and then that CFD board has the authority to issue bonds and construct. And then there's an ongoing administration and maintenance responsibility that the CFD board has oversight of. Just real briefly, Mesa's history. We did adopt a policy back in 2002. It was closely tied back to that time, if you can remember, the Longbow development. There was some early talk about that. Decision was made back then, for whatever reasons, not to move forward with the CFD. So we've never actually
brought forth an application for a CFD, or has the city authorized a CFD in its history. The interesting thing is, part of the Mesa Gateway Strategic Plan, one of the items we have identified through that is, in order to bring critical infrastructures, one of the financial tools identified is a CFD capability. We have received several inquiries, at least out in the Gateway area, of developers, property owners interested in this, so we thought between the two interests, we thought we'd move forward with this. I think we talked a little about those. Our policy update is centered on three things: our updating of our deposit fees, our taxation levy standards and protections, and then some technical corrections. And then finally, one of the key things we wanted to make sure of is, as Keith talked about, there's quite an extensive evaluation by staff. And we wanted to make sure when we go through this process that we can fully recover our costs associated with that, whether it be through city staff or consultants having to being brought on to help do an analysis. So there are some fees tied to this, or deposits. For instance, to do an application, it's $75,000 non-refundable to initiate that process. We took a look at across the nation, particularly in Arizona, what those fees are, and similars are anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000. There is an additional deposit of $60,000, which is really utilized to cover the staff time and cost to do the evaluation, to do the market absorption studies. And then there is an additional $25,000 in the event the CFD is set up to handle ongoing maintenance of the CFD, the board's costs for elections and associated items. So the goal is a CFD should be generating enough fees to cover the cost of the city's evaluation as well as the ongoing maintenance. So in effect, that's the end of our presentation. The purpose of what we wanted to come is saying it's a new day, a new council. We've never really done one. There are some updates if we want to move forward to that. So we're here seeking direction.
Keith, one question on those fees. I know we looked there between a certain rank, and it looked like we chose the middle. In your experience, are those fees, forgetting the on our side, in the marketplace side, are those fees reasonable, and would they be a detriment, or would they be a deciding factor in somebody not doing that, or are they in the realm of what others do and the marketplace, and those developers that would be interested would be used to those kind of a fees, and therefore they're acceptable in the marketplace?
I think the fees that are proposed here are reasonable and acceptable. You don't want to do lots of little CFDs for every. It's not like you may have an improvement district program to pave a street here and there, and you go through that process on a small scale. CFDs tend to be large scale, tend to be developer driven for new development, and so this kind of fee is appropriate. I should point out we described three fees. Only the first one, the $75,000, is really just a fee. The others are deposits to cover costs, and they evergreen. So you pay your $75,000 to make your application, and you deposit $60,000 to cover costs. As that $60,000 gets drawn down and spent to pay fees, costs, and expenses of processing, you're the developer, the applicant. You have to, when it gets down a ways, down to like $10,000, you have to put the money back again. So that's really not a fee that is an arbitrary number. It is just a deposit to cover actual costs. The $25,000 that goes once pretty much from formation forward is the same thing. It's an evergreen deposit to cover whatever the true costs are. So really the only thing that's an actual imposition fee, arbitrary number, if you will, is the $75,000, which I think is well within a reasonable range that a developer would expect.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
The assessment that would be made on the property owners inside this to pay for all these infrastructure needs, police stations, fire stations, libraries, parks and recreation facilities. We also have a bond election coming up citywide for the same types of items. If we create a CFD, specifically let's use the GM Proving Ground, and we use that to fund this type of infrastructure. When we go for another bond proposal for citywide police, fire, street services, are the folks who are paying inside the CFD also going to be assessed a rate including the citywide bonds?
Yes. Everybody within the CFD is still within the city, so they still pay tax.
Knowing that, do we have any idea what voter behavior is after creating the CFD and how that's impacted elections in other communities for citywide bond projects?
Mayor, Councilman Summers, I believe there has been some studies done on that, and we can see that those would be provided to you to show what that propensity is.
Okay, that's something we have to consider, too. To the specific point about the changes that are being made, I would recommend that we move forward.
Mayor, can I ask a question of Keith, because I think this may be important. Keith, when we set up a CFD, as the council was set up as the board, is it available that throughout the life, well, I don't want to say the life of the development, but during a certain phasing of the development, that they can approve a variety of projects in different phases and different levels of infrastructure, not necessarily that they would have to agree that the capacity, ultimate capacity for bonds may be estimated to be $400 million and commit to themselves at the beginning. Can that exist over a period of time under the same authority and process to issue bonds? Like we do as a city, we look at it on an annual basis or maybe even a five-year CIP. Does that still apply for the council to be able to look at that for the developer?
That's another distinction between an improvement district, which the city over the years has done on several occasions, which is sort of a one-shot, let's get this project financed and assess the people around it, and it's really the city's deal. Forming a CFD is a long-term thing. You create this CFD, it continues to function as long as it exists. It could issue bonds, you know, as going through all the processes. Once you formed it, it's formed. Then you have a bond. If you're going to do general obligation bonds, you have to have authorization and election. The qualified electors, if there are any, or the and often at the beginning there are none, and so the landowners vote. And so you get an authority for $50 million of GO bonds or $100 million. You can issue those each year. You could issue a small amount based on the assessed value that's available. And as property develops and the assessed value increases, then each year you have more room that your $2 tax rate or $3 tax rate will pay. You can issue a little bit more bonds, and then as things go on. So yes, it is planned that this would be an ongoing thing. You're not committing up front to anything unless over time, as you say, performance-based. Over time, the CFD gets to where it needs to be, then you can do more. One of the things we often do is the developer says, yeah, but I need the stuff now. If I'm going to build and sell, I need to get the roads in. So the developer advances the money, working with the city to make sure that public bidding is complied with and all the other rules. The developer pays to put in the infrastructure, but they keep a list of everything they've put in and what it costs. Then when maybe a year later, the assessed value is high enough that we could issue a bond issue, we issue the bond issue, and we, in effect, reimburse them or acquire from them the road that they put in, and then the water line that they put in. So yes, it can be an ongoing process that what's important is that we monitor it and make sure we don't go too far ahead of ourselves in what we issue and what the taxes are. And that's part of the reason that we have a limit, usually a target tax limit, is for the issue that Councilmember Summers mentioned of discouraging people within the district from participating in the city's bond issues. Because we try and keep that target tax that the CFD is charging relatively small. We don't really have any hard data. I'd be interested to see what the studies are. I hear anecdotally both ways, that people in CFDs sort of understand and they don't mind paying for infrastructure versus the, well, you've already taxed me, why should you tax me again? But in any case, we try and keep that tax rate, the CFD tax rate, small.
Okay. Councilmember Summers?
On that last point about reimbursing the developer for those fees, and maybe Mr. Brady could answer this. We have a similar program, I suppose, with City Share, where the city reimburses. It's a little bit different. I would imagine we wouldn't be reimbursing through the CFD every cost. We would be reimbursing a portion of cost. How we have historically gone through is some things that the developer has historically been responsible for, some things the city has been
Sometimes we share those costs with city share under specific requirements. That type of policy will continue under the CFD. We wouldn't be utilizing the CFD to pay all development costs inside here. Is that right?
That's certainly possible. I think you have to look at each particular case and the development that is before you and what's trying to be achieved. Again, it goes back to the goals of that development and what you believe the gap may be and what assistance we can provide. But certainly you would probably expect the developer to exercise some investment into the project. But I think all those are negotiated down the road.
Yeah, and I think you need to look at the purpose of the CFD. The CFD is a financing tool. A financing mechanism, and it really goes outside the normal realm of development, because many times it's a way where a developer would be paying to put in this infrastructure, not the city. A CFD provides them a manner or a way to finance this long term to get development or infrastructure that the city would not do on its own, because it is project or area specific. And the reason they utilize the CFD is so they can finance that, whereas we would not be financing that. So in that sense, it's a little different than a normal thing where someone has a small piece of property, widens a street, and there's a city share that comes into it. The CFD is formed in anticipation or with the understanding that they're either going to have to finance it through traditional methods or through this method, but it's still, at the beginning, their cookie, their thing. Is that accurate? Okay.
True, but oftentimes when you look at some of what's being spent here, police and fire stations are popular, libraries. Developers haven't historically put those in. The city tax dollars have built those. There's impact fees.
I don't want to get this overly complicated.
I know it can get very complicated, right. But we're transferring, instead of having our taxpayers as a whole, the city, the existing ones, pay for that growth. And it goes back to what the mayor said. We are transferring it from the taxpayers that currently live here to those who would directly benefit those, and they will pay for those
Right. It's the base of the tax. The beneficiaries are going to pay for it. Right. But I think all those things are negotiated as we look at this. You know, if you've got developments that are further out from our current services, that's why you may make the argument that libraries and public safety maybe need to be provided by that developer now, so that those services can be there to benefit them in the early stages
of development. And I think what we said was that generally, although those are available, generally most CFDs are used to finance basic infrastructure, streets, sewer and water. Although under the law, you could use that to finance these other things, such as machinery, such as libraries. My guess is that in many instances, the city is assumed to take care of that. But in the negotiation up front, that could be part of the deal. Well, we could say you're going to use it to build this fire station, which serves your area, which you also have a CFD on.
It also sometimes helps that the city may charge impact fees right now. When you say the city builds this, that, or the other thing, it may be, but they may be using impact fees that they charge the developers. But rather than wait, maybe the developer says, well, I'm going to build this development. You say, great, we'll build a fire station out there in about 9 years.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I'd rather have it now. Well, there's no money now. But if you want to finance it through the CFD, we can put it in now. And then you get a credit, basically, against the
which is typically the growth scenario. I mean, over years and years, growth ends up paying. The problem is that it's a delayed payment. It's a cash flow. You always have to invest up front and then wait for the growth to pay it back.
And sometimes from city's point of view, that's one of the reasons to do a CFD. And say, well, you know, why are we doing this? Just to be nice to a developer. One of the things may be, well, we'll do this CFD and do this, that, and the other thing, but we want the fire station now. And we want the library sooner, and we want this now.
It's not to be nice to the developer. Yeah. It's to be fair to our existing taxpayer.
Yes.
What it's for.
Any other questions? Yes. Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, sir. I just had some for later, if you could get with me with regard to how it works with a residential development, notifying future residents, the instruments, things like that, so I can get it later.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We'll be bringing back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we need some direction. So, if you would, the sense is that unless there's someone who doesn't want to bring back the formal policy,
we'll
act on
it
in a formal manner in
Thank
a future
you.
Meeting. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other business? You have a motion to adjourn. Moved by Councilmember Higgins, second by Councilmember Fenter. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.